the inheritance issue really has to focus on the doctrine, the biblical doctrine of the covenant. And that doctrine has five sections. It can be stated in a number of ways, but basically the five points of the covenant are God, man, law, sanctions, and time. God, man, law, sanctions, and time. There are other ways of putting it, the other ways I have written about it. You talk about a transcendent God who is present with us. Point one. You talk about a hierarchy of authority with, of course, for a Christian, Jesus Christ, as the mediator between God and man who came in history to bring us to salvation and healing. And the third point, ethics. That is law. What's good? What's evil? What's right? What's wrong? Then the fourth point, you could say, and I have said, oath. In other words, every covenant is established by oath, an oath, God-honoring oath. And that establishes then sanctions. Some sanctions are blessings, some sanctions are cursings. And the two great passages in the scriptures on the blessings and the cursings are Leviticus 26 and Deuteronomy 28. Then finally, the issue of time, but I call it and can be called succession. That is, in history, who wins and who loses, who inherits and who is disinherited. Now, the handy-dandy acronym for that is THEOS. Transcendence, hierarchy, ethics, oath, and succession. Of course, THEOS being the Greek word for God. The covenant is an inescapable concept. It is never a question of covenant versus no covenant. It is a question of whose covenant. Now, this was set forth very clearly for us in the first three chapters of the book of Genesis, where it begins with, in the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. Now, that establishes God as the absolute authority because he is the creator. And since he is the creator, he is the owner of all of creation, and therefore absolutely sovereign over that creation. So you cannot escape beyond the first verse of the Bible. The fundamental covenantal principle is God is transcendent. He is over the creation, different from the creation, yet he is, as we read throughout the first three chapters, present with the creation. Now, we then read of the creation of man. Verses 26 through 28 of the first chapter of Genesis. God said, let us make man in our own image. So man reflects God, represents God, establishes dominion over the creation on behalf of God. There's no escape from that. Men may attempt to escape from it in rebellion, but they cannot escape from it, and they are held accountable by God for the fulfillment of whatever it is that God has given them as individuals and as covenantal units to establish his authority, his dominion in history. There is no escape. Man is a dominion creature. He either seeks the glory of God or he seeks the glory of some aspect of the creation, but he will seek glory. Then there's the issue of law or ethics. That's clear cut in what Adam was given. You may eat of any tree of the garden save but one. Eat of that tree and you violate the terms of the covenant. Then you get to the sanctions. If you eat of that tree, on that day ye shall surely die. Major sanction, death. Now what isn't given, and this is the great thing, what is not given in that original formulation is the issue of inheritance. only insofar indirectly as it says, be fruitful and multiply. It's implied, but it's not stated. But after the fall, by the grace of God, the inheritance is stated in Genesis 3:15. And that is the promise that God gives, that there will be a seed of the woman. And the seed of the woman will rise up and crush the head of the serpent, though he will have a heel that is vulnerable and injured. So there you have it laid out. There is inheritance, there is disinheritance. There is covenant breaker, there is covenant keeper. And the structure of biblical covenantal law is that over time, by the grace of God, through obedience to the law of God, covenant keepers inherit and covenant breakers are disinherited. Now, all Christians understand this with respect to the final day of judgment. That is really not a big debate point among people who call themselves followers of Jesus Christ with respect to the final judgment. The debate comes in this interim period that we call history. The first five books of Moses, Genesis, Exodus, Leviticus, Numbers, and Deuteronomy, are in fact structured in terms of the 5 points of the covenant. Now that, if you're going to find one thesis in my life, in my career, and all the work I've done, somebody looks back and says, what did North do? What did he hammer on? That's what he hammered on. Genesis is the book of origins, the book of the creation, which establishes God as the absolute authority over creation, because he is the creator of it. Exodus is the book of hierarchy, because God is pictured as the deliverer. And he raises up Moses, who is an intermediary, that is a mediator, but of course not a mediator of salvation, but he's a mediator of deliverance. And there's the war between Moses and Pharaoh. And Pharaoh loses. And the Exodus, therefore, is a confirmation that God is in charge of history. So in the hierarchy, God exercises, through his covenant people, dominion in history. And the covenant breaker is cut off. And the war between Moses and Pharaoh, I think, is the classic example of this, really, in all of Scripture. So I wrote a book called Moses and Pharaoh, which you can buy in the bookstore, discussing this rivalry. Then the third book is Leviticus. Well, we know in Leviticus mainly that that's the book where we stop reading the Old Testament. That's the one about all of the Levitical laws, the purity laws, the sacrifices. By the way, how many sacrifices? 5. Are they structured by the biblical covenant model? Yes. And that's where generally we stop reading. But it is the book of purity, the book of law. Then the fourth book, which really does confuse people, and for understandable reasons, that's Numbers. What is it about? It's about the conquest. It's about the first couple of chapters, the first few chapters are on the concept of the conflict that doesn't take place because the people of Israel won't go in. And two representatives say, we got to go in. Of course, in that case, Joshua and Caleb, they say, we got to take them. And 10 of the tribes say, we can't take them. They're too big. Giants are in the land. So that in the first section of Numbers, God places them under judgment, under sanctions, for the next 38 years or 39 years to wander in the wilderness. And only at the end, the final chapters, do you see then the beginning of the conquest outside the land of Canaan, where they begin to take those Canaanitic kings, the giants, Og, for example, where they take, as a preliminary down payment, they impose now the sanctions, the negative sanctions, on the covenant breakers. And then finally there's Deuteronomy, and that is the rereading of the law, the second law, Deuteronomus, the rereading of the law, the giving of the law again, where Moses goes over the whole history, restates the law, reestablishes the terms of the covenant. Why? Because it's covenant reaffirmation. It's covenant renewal with the new generation that is going to inherit, because all of the old generation is gone, with, of course, the exception of Caleb, to whom the promise is given that he will participate in the conquest because he said in the beginning they should march in. So you have the 5 points of the covenant structured in terms of the 5 books of Moses. Now, why is that important? If we look at Deuteronomy, that is the book of the inheritance, but it also means it is the book of the disinheritance. Because you never have inheritance without disinheritance. You never have the positive sanctions without the negative sanctions. You never have heaven without hell. You never have the lake of fire, Revelation 20, without the new heavens and the new earth, Revelation 21. There are always the dual sanctions of blessing and cursing. There is therefore always the dual inheritance in history of either the positive sanctions or the negative sanctions. And the ultimate negative sanction is just what God said it was in Genesis. It's death. Only we call it, in the New Testament, the second death. And that is permanent. And for most Christians, that's not an issue. Most Christians believe in heaven and hell. And if they have studied anything about, at least in the end of Revelation, they realize that we're told that the contents of hell are finally dumped into the lake of fire, and that becomes the permanent location. And then, of course, in 21, 22, you have the description of the final culmination of the new heavens and the new earth. After the resurrection, when people are reunited, their souls are reunited with their bodies, and we're back where we should have been in Genesis 3. Took a long time, will take a long time, but that's the process of history. History is therefore the sorting out of the issues of the sanctions. Whose covenant is the one that you will commit to? Whose choose life, Moses says. Choose life. Whose law? God's or man's? Whose sanctions? God's or man's? Whose authority? Is it God's or man's? Now, I have sketched out in the handout the issues of the 4 covenantal institutions. Actually, 3 institutions and 1 other covenant. There are only 4 covenants in the Scriptures. There is the individual covenant. That is one's personal commitment to Jesus Christ or his rebellion against Christ. There is the church covenant. There is the family covenant, established by oath and under law. And finally, there is the civil covenant, the covenant of the state. And we read very clearly in Romans 13, 1-7, where Paul outlines that the state is for the punishment of evildoers, and that civil magistrates, in fact, are referred to as ministers of God. So the point is, there are 4 covenants. There are oaths involved in all of them. There are hierarchies. There are, obviously, laws. There are sanctions. And then there, through history, are either the 2 choices of inheritance or disinheritance. And there is a war on. And there will always be a war on, for as long as history goes on, over all 5 points of the covenant. And I call it this: who's in charge here? To whom do I report? What are the rules? What do I get if I obey or disobey? And the final one, does this outfit have a future? And there in the 20th century, and really stretching back certainly into the second half of the 19th century, the great war is that issue. Does this outfit have a future? That's the issue of inheritance and disinheritance in history. Now, between the Christians and the non-Christians, the issue of does this outfit have a future, the issue of who inherits in history, we see that overwhelmingly and inescapably in the war between Darwinism and creationism. Because the Darwinist substitute a new God, and that is impersonal nature as the source of all things. Until, and this is the ringer, this is the trick, until man. And the Darwinist then switches the arguments to say, with the advent of man, there has now been purpose inserted into the universe because man can make decisions, man understands the future, man understands hierarchy, law, and causation. And therefore, man takes control. And Friedrich Engels, Karl Marx's partner in the establishment of communism, had this wonderful phrase, man proposes and man disposes. And that is the heart of it. That is the nature of the modern war between Christians and the modern secular humanist order. It is the issue of who proposes and who disposes. It is the issue of who predestinates. Is it God or is it the state? And that issue is the warfare issue of the 21st century, and it was the warfare issue of the 20th century. Man proposes and man disposes. And the Bible says he does neither. God proposes and God disposes. It is God's decree, not man's decree, that is authoritative in history. And that's the warfare. And that's why the fight will not go away. Because the covenantal issue will not go away, and it hasn't gone away since the third chapter of Genesis. The first two sections of the Bible, Genesis 1, 2, and a little bit of 3, is this story. It is the story of the transition from grace to wrath. Right? And the whole rest of the Bible, until the final judgment, is the other part of the story. The rest of the story. The transition from wrath to grace. And there's a war going on over the nature of that battle, of that transition. We are in the transition from wrath to grace. And that is the message that Christians bring. And of course, it was the message that Moses brought. But it is clearer with us because Christ and the resurrection are behind us. And not just the resurrection, as I'll go on to discuss. With this as the background, let's talk a little about what is our problem at this point in history. What is the issue, what I think is the fundamental issue that best describes why you feel in much of what you are doing like a fish out of water. Most of the people in this room are fringe people. And not just kind of fringe people, not just kind of Christian evangelicals in the midst of a society that is overwhelmingly dominated, top to bottom, by secular humanism. And fringe in that sense. And not just fringe people in the sense that there are many people in here who have made the break with the tax-supported school system, which really puts you into, in this society, almost an extreme fringe. But you've also gone on to the next stage, many of you at least, to say, not only have we pulled our kids out of the public school system, but in fact, we have gone to the homeschool system, and then beyond that, some of you are saying, we don't like the content of the curriculum materials that are in the